Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. And getting back to the culture creators, Lord Bertrand Russell, and especially Charles Galton Darwin in the 1950s. Now, Charles Galton Darwin, also a top member of these international groups planning in the whole future, and a descendant of Charles Darwin, of course. He was a physicist who worked on the Manhattan Project, so he was into that and eugenics, like all of his lineage. But he wrote in his own book, The Next Million Years, he said, we shall do all these things that I've mentioned, like hypersexualization of the people, but he says we've got to bring down the population of the ordinary people. In other words, it's not too many people, it's too many of the wrong kind of people, you understand?
Oh, I see.
Because the future is to be for the new scientific, technocratic elites that can go into the future and serve their masters. They won't need all the labor that they have today, you see. So he said that if we can tempt the women into the workplaces and so on, he said, then and offer them material things like cars and so on, and use the culture industry to promote all this through movies and fiction, then they'll go for it. And again, they won't get married. They won't want children, he said. We can also introduce sterilization agents into the males through either the water, the food, or we can put it through injections even, he said. And all of that's actually been done. It's a horrific story, but it is actually documented. Even the United Nations talked about their wonderful gold and rice a few years ago. It was in the Canadian papers. Going to give it to all the third world countries. It just had a little side effect. It made men sterile, you know. Well, you see, they've been doing all the things they talked about, because you don't have world meetings with all the top honchos there who make up a wish list for Santa Claus. These guys have the ability and the power to get it into action. And since they're not going to get volunteers to come forward very readily, they do it, folks. They simply do it. It's been done. We've watched this, the infertility skyrocket. Now it's a plague today.
Oh, yeah. I've even noticed people that I know that are just absolutely not, the amount of people that are not able to have children, or that have, you know, women that are having miscarriages, etc. It's literally mind-boggling. Yeah. And that's just the people that I know.
The biggest growing industry in the U.S. in that field is the fertility clinics.
Oh, yeah.
This was unheard of only 30 years ago, you know. But it's all here now. It's not happening by chance. Things don't just happen by chance when they've been planned that way, written about in academia, lots of papers and books and so on, and bingo, it just comes along by itself. Doesn't happen like that, folks. You know, so it's because it was planned that way.
Well, and people just think that it's normal, so they normalize it. So, oh, it's just normal that you have like seven miscarriages before you can get pregnant, and they normalize all
of it. See, it's a new normal. Don't forget that Charles Galton Darwin, the descendant of Charles Darwin, he was a physicist who worked on the Manhattan Project. In his book in the 1950s, he put out The Next Million Years, by the way. He said about the future and how the same elite would rule it and society they'd bring in. Getting back to talking about women looking sometimes masculine, he said we shall alter the hormonal chemistry in the male to make him more passive. And it'll have a different effect on the women, who become more assertive and aggressive. And sure enough, in the 1960s, in the medical books, it came out for the first time. They'd suddenly noticed, that doesn't happen in evolution, suddenly noticed that women's hips were getting narrower all the time. And that's when they started cesarean sections more often. So physically, we're getting re-engineered back then. And Charles Galton Darwin also says we can put it in their water supply, in their food, or even inject it with them, or inject substances which will alter their hormonal chemistry. This is stuff that you don't get this from a top global player like Charles Galton Darwin, high up there in even the physics world. He also said too, by the way, we are in the process, and he was talking on behalf of the top elite eugenicists that also have charge of these programs. He said, we are now in the process of creating a new form of slavery, he said. This is, there's always been slavery in one form or another. We're now in the process of creating a new form of slavery, a more sophisticated form of slavery. This is where it all ends up to be. Once again, getting way back, way, way back to the groups that were set up before World War II and during and after World War II, it all came together. Given more power, in fact, through big meetings. And they would shape the cultures of the world, and they would shape what we would be taught, what would not be taught, and so on, and including the techniques that would must be taught, like guilt, to be obedient, and so they would never ever think in a wild fashion again. You find that Charles Galton Darwin, I mentioned, I think last week or the week before, he wrote The Next Million Years, but he said, we, the leaders of the world, the true leaders, the scientific elite. And that's how the Darwin family still referred to themselves, including to the relatives of the Huxley family, that they were a scientific elite, like intergenerational. Some families were dominant minorities with the money and finance and ability, mental acuity to manage finances across the whole planet. But underneath them would be the scientific and academic elite that would run it all for them, including scientists of the mind. But Charles Galton Darwin said, getting back to the war scenario, that we, he said, we, the leaders, the elite leaders, are the captains of the ship, or the ships that run the world. He said, we must remain wild men, unrestricted, he's talking about, unrestricted by normative conventions of society and culture, and do whatever it takes to survive and manage this planet, Earth, you see. He says, but the rest of the public must be managed completely, almost like a captive people. Charles Galton Darwin believed that an elite should rule the world, a psychologically stable elite. And of course, they would have their own definitions of that, of course. But he also said that the better type of ruler would be someone who's completely dispassionate, like a scientist. And they would be impartial to all the terrible things they'd have to do in humanity, like killing millions, maybe even billions, to across the world, if that was ever necessary, and who could do it dispassionately without cracking up, with conscience, basically. And he wasn't far off from the truth from those who really rule the planet. But he also talked about creating a better type of human, although he said that it would take so long to do so in natural selection and so on, or even specialized conditioning for selection. Then he said that they'd have to, in other words, dumb the people down, the general population down, with the IQ, debase them of any higher sensibilities. They would naturally, as we all know from the think tanks that he was involved in too, because he knew Russell and the Macy groups and all the other groups were given a lot of power and financing from governments and the private foundations to create a new culture for society. It's already here. You're seeing it. You're in it.
We are, as I say, certainly on a roll towards this brave new world scenario, which to most people will be just the outcome of bungling and incompetence, etc. That's how it's always projected to the public, and that's the reasons we're told why decisions are suddenly made. And the reality is no decisions are suddenly made. In fact, nothing is a surprise at the top. You don't pay thousands of think tanks big, big money to make mistakes. But I've gone on about the dwindling male population in the last few weeks, and I've been showing you how it ties in with the agenda. And it all comes out startlingly, of course, as always, presented to the public as though it's a sudden discovery, even though they've known for 50 years that basically the male sperm count has been plummeting. It's incidental too, of course, that big players like Charles Galton Darwin, who was a physicist of the famous Darwin family lineage, came out with his book, The Next Million Years, in 1956, I think it was. And it was acclaimed as a bestseller and a must-be book for the elite, speaking on behalf of the elite, because his whole basically theory was to eradicate the lower classes who had no purpose in a post-industrial society, and the fear of himself and the elite whom he represented was that the lower classes would outbreed the better gene types, the the ones who'd practiced good eugenics for centuries, like himself. And that's a fact if you look into the Darwin family and the Galton family. And in his book, he talked about the necessity to bring this global system in, because they had it all projected way back then, and long before they'd bring in a global society based on the British Empire. He said that the biggest opposition would come from males, mainly Caucasian males, and they'd have to effeminize the males and get them out of the way to bring this agenda through. And he advocated ways of basically giving the males extra estrogen, the female hormone, through various and every possible means possible, whether it was in their water, even in the milk of babies. And injections would be used too to target the endocrine system of the male. Well, I've read articles this last week or so, couple of weeks, on this very, very thing. Suddenly they're saying, my God, there's not enough men getting born, there's a lot of stillbirths, there's a lot of problems cropping up, and they just don't know what to do about it. And again, it dovetails right in to this new transhumanist movement and post-humanist movement that again suddenly sprung up, well-funded by millions and millions of dollars and headed by big professional people. And I'm going to continue with this and more information after the following break. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. And I think it was Monday, perhaps, I talked about the Disappearing Male, a documentary on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation on their site, which they had showed on television here in Canada, to do with this very problem about the incredible infertility amongst men and some of the factors that are involved in causing it. Once again, I'll reiterate that most people will always go through life thinking that everything is just the result of blunders and incompetence, and that's how it's always projected to them. But you cannot go back into the eugenics movement and see the big organizations that were heavily funded and spoke on behalf of the already existent elite, the dominant minority. And they talked about all the problems they could foresee in the future if they did not reduce the population, but especially the male population, because generally it's men who fight changes. That's why the United Nations bypasses the males in all the third world countries and goes right to the females, giving them loans and grants, supplying them with equipment and so on to get their own businesses started, to get the men out of the picture. Men tend to be traditionalists, and they'd have to be removed from the scene one way or another. Many world meetings were held about this problem, and it's happened. As if 50 years since Darwin wrote his book, here we are with the very, very outcome of it, and people think it's just, again, incompetence and greed on behalf of the chemical industries, etc. There's many factors involved, but the fact is we've been under literally a bio-warfare attack from the womb onwards. And it's self-evident. There's another article come out, and by the way, the CBC link, I believe they pulled it, so I was told, at least the States can't get it now. But I'll put another link up. I realize there's another one up there on one of the sites where you can view it, and I'll put it up tonight at the end of the show. It's a keeper. And this is another article from the Globe and Mail, Saturday, September the 20th, 2008. It says, humanity at risk, are the males going first? Something is happening to today's boys and men. Few are being born compared with girls. They're having more trouble in school. Virility and fertility are down, and testicular cancer rates are up. Now, scientists say these fragile males may be more vulnerable than females to pollutants, affecting their development as early as the womb. If so, writes Martin Mittelstad, it could be a bigger threat to our future than global warming. Well, this is a real threat because it's done on purpose, you see. Since the first clue was how difficult it was becoming to find enough young boys to cobble together a basketball team or a baseball team. Then women in prenatal groups started remarking on how everyone in their groups was having girls. So his impression was quickly backed up by a check of band records. In some years, nearly two girls were being born for every boy, a major anomaly given that the normal boy-girl sex ratio is 106 to 100. The Sarnia area, that's in Ontario, Canada, has been prone to many pollutants or pollution-related woes, but the implications here seem to be arising all over the world. Males may be more fragile of sex when it comes to exposure to modern chemicals from the embryonic stage on. I thought about predictive programming and how those in the future of society get these rights to write the novels and make the movies to get us all ready for this. So you think it's all quite natural. We're just evolving into this extinction. Says the recent sci-fi thriller Children of Men imagined a world population doomed to extinction when, over the coming years, every last human being on Earth becomes infertile. Now some scientists are painting a similarly frightening picture of a widespread threat to male birth rates and later virility and fertility. What's more, they believe serious damage to men and boys is already occurring. University of Pittsburgh's Devra Davis, in a study issued last year, found that the US and Japan combined had a staggering tally of 262,000 missing boys from 1970 to about 2000 because of a decline in sex ratio at birth. She says, although it could be a statistical anomaly, she says, the figure is very worrisome. Dr. Davis, director for the Center for Environmental Oncology at the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute, points out another disturbing trend, the rise in what scientists have dubbed testicular dysgenesis syndrome, a catch-all phrase for a raft of male reproductive system ailments. Among them is hypospadias, a disfiguring penis abnormality in babies where the urinary opening is on the underside rather than its normal position on the top. The condition is not new, but boys today are far more likely than their fathers to be born with it. The incidence, adjusted for population size, is up about 60% since the mid-1970s in Canada. Other countries have also experienced increases. The incidence rate of testicular cancer in young Canadian men aged 20 to 44, for reasons unknown, has risen 54% from 1983 to 2005, according to figures compiled by Cancer Care Ontario. I guess they're right on target with killing us off, eh? And levels of testosterone and hormone that choreographs male development from libido to muscle mass have inexplicably declined in U.S. men over the past two decades by nearly 20%. I'd already plummeted before that. A recent study found that women in San Francisco area during the 60s who had higher levels of PCBs gave birth to a third fewer boys than women with low amounts of the chemical, suggesting in utero exposures to the now banned toxin were able to cull males. Culling males, you see. Exactly what Galton Darwin and his clique talked about. University of Florida zoologist Theo Colburn is often heralded as a modern-day version of environmental prophet Rachel Carson. In 1996, she co-wrote Our Stolen Future, which first raised the possibility that synthetic chemicals may interfere with normal hormone functioning. More recently, she has begun giving lectures on the male predicament. I definitely feel that the males are really suffering more, says Dr. Colburn, who is also president of the Colorado-based Endocrine Disruption Exchange. That's what they call this, endocrine disruption in the womb, because these artificial estrogens mimic and block, actually, the male growth of their own male hormones. They're created by biowarfare. That's why they're so perfect. And that's why they're so much in use today. Nothing gets on the shelves for the public unless it's been tested first by the military-industrial complex, which works hand in glove with the pharmaceutical agencies. They're all chemically based, you see. Probably all pills today are made and come out of the petrochemical business. Says here, the most insidious of the hormonally active chemicals may be the ones that mimic the powerful female hormone estrogen. Compounds as diverse as pesticides and plastics, mercury and uranium, are able to fool cells into thinking that they are dealing with estrogen rather than an artificial imposter. You don't have to be a PhD biologist or doctor to know that pouring estrogen into a male is not a good idea. No kidding. This is Frederick von Saal, a U.S. biologist who has done pioneering research into the harmful effects of bisphenol A. That's the stuff they put in all your plastic drinking bottles and line beer cans with and so on. Why would they have to line beer cans? I mean, it's mainly men that drink beer, isn't it? And it's been promoted in all the Western countries with incredible advertising. It's all the ball games. And of course, men are dropping all over the place with cancer of the prostate. He says the phthalates, these are the phthalates, these are other things called phthalates. These other chemicals, he says, added to many plastics inhibit testosterone production and can also, according to some researchers, be associated with irregular genital development, although the industry, of course, denies it. Meanwhile, brominated flame retardants, now bromine used to be given to guys in the military to calm their sexual urges. So they put it into flame retardants, which is all of your cafetine curtains and all the rest of it, and furniture. Brominated flame retardants routinely used in products ranging from television sets to mattress foams. By the way, I don't know the black plastic that most televisions come in today and your computers and all the rest of it was actually banned back in the 50s and 60s because it gave off when heated these particular chemical agencies. But about 10 years ago, they changed that law and allowed it to be used in every home. Dr. Von Saal says this mishmash of synthetic hormones leading to too much estrogen and too little testosterone, it says here, and thyroid hormone is making a mass of sexual development in males, a mess of sexual development in males. Down in the page it says the researchers found that men in the 1987 category had significantly more testosterone than men of the same age in 2004. Over a decade and a half, decline worked out to be a dramatic 17%. Certainly something to consider and be worried about, particularly if it is related to fertility, Dr. Travison says. Now, why isn't it a major crisis? I've said that for years, the United Nations gives us the statistics on the decline in testosterone and fertility and all of the facts that they give out every year from the United Nations Department of Population Control. And what do you think population control means? And they blithely give it the stats and never give any comment about crisis, and they tell us we're pretty well 85% sterile. That's because it's the agenda. Otherwise, it would be a crisis.
And Procter & Gamble came out only a few years ago and just happened to have, well, they admitted they just happened to have been using all along to wash these little glass jars out they put all this mush baby food in and made an awful lot of money with. They washed out those jars to sterilize them before they filled them with the food, with what just happens to turn out to be a synthetic form of estrogen. Oh my, what a coincidence. What a coincidence. Big Procter & Gamble got into that. My goodness. After Charles Galton Darwin talked about ways to get estrogen into the food, etc., in order to effeminize the men. But it's amazing. It's like winning the lotto. How many people win the lotto wherever you live? Yeah, these guys write things, and lo and behold, things just happen, and accidents happen in their favor all the time. Accidents, you know, like 9/11. Well, the same thing with artificial estrogen ends up in the baby formula. My. What luck.
And as I say, why not? Why shouldn't these guys control the world for another couple of hundred years and direct it into their perfect utopia? And now that they can start culling us off, they don't need us to manufacture anymore. They don't need us to go off and fight all the wars they'd planned. They're almost finished with the wars. Now the war is against the general population of the whole planet. Overpopulation, they claim, which is nonsense. But what they really mean is the useless eaters. You see, economists don't believe in keeping pets around. And that's where we are now. We're just pets. Spoiled pets, supposedly. They're eating all the resources and using the resources that their families, you know, the elite's families, those who have evolved more It's for those families to survive in the future. And here we are, we're not producing that anymore. We're just basically passing things around in a service economy and using up all their resources that their great-grandchildren should be using one day for themselves. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Slavery is slavery, and, you know, if you go into Charles Galton Darwin's book, The Grandson of Charles Darwin, it's called The Next Million Years, a massive boast of culling off the useless eaters again, and how the elite should come through, and how the servant class should be basically lobotomized to make them obedient and not too bright. Well, he said himself that the ruling body who are guiding the world, they're the captains of the ship, that they won't have lobotomies or anything done to their bodies to make them stupid, because you must retain your survival capabilities to run the ship called Planet Earth. Arrogance, incredible arrogance, but not just arrogance. They have the power, financial and organization-wise, to do so. And they have been doing it, by the way. Incredible.
The population, as I've said many times before, would have no option if they understood truth. This is why they gave you democracy and voting, that you're getting plundered and used and abused in a very more a sophisticated form of slavery. That's the term that's used. That's what Charles Galton Darwin called it in The Next Million Years, his book, non-fiction book. And Charles Galton Darwin, a member of the Darwin family, was a physicist. And in the 1950s, he wrote his book on how the world was. And a few simple little lines here and there, they let so much out of the bag. But he said that the wild men control the planet. The wild men are those who haven't been tamed by their indoctrination. They've been given a different understanding of reality from childhood in certain families. And they know how the world really works, and how the human mind really works, and how the populations come to their conclusions. They understand that. They're taught that from an early, early age. They're wild men. And being wild men, and not hampered by any cultural norms or even religions that hamper overt, nasty action against the populace, they can do whatever they want. There's something awfully important to understand here about what I'm saying. Again, it was talked about by many of the top globalists back in the 50s and 60s that they would have to do this for world peace, they called it. And you find with Charles Galton Darwin, the physicist and grandson of Charles Darwin, he wrote a book called The Next Million Years. And he also was a scientist who worked on the Manhattan Project with all the other top scientists. He was at all the global meetings, of course, and he was lauded for his book on ways to bring down, massively cull and reduce the populations. But he said we'd have to use various drugs on the public, and including hormones, he says, hormones to alter the physical makeup of the males especially and make them more docile. Well, that's why you've had all this kind of stuff put into your food, into your plastic bottles, even baby's formula and the baby's bottles as well. And men now literally are almost infertile. There's so much data come out on BPA, for instance, has been banned in Canada just yesterday or the day before. Although they aren't going to take it off the out of their products for 2 years. So I can actually see the physical effects on the young guys today. They have no shoulders. They're very narrow shoulders. They're more effeminate now too. And it's a deadly stuff. But the big boys did say they would use hormones on the public. They also said, too, that excesses of certain hormones would affect women in a different manner. They make them more masculine, more aggressive. And that has happened, too. And it's helped also to further destroy the family unit.
Remember what Lenin said. And he was taught by the best bankers of the West. He said, mankind could go off in 1,000 different kinds of social societies, but the public must not be allowed to know this. They must think that the one they're born into is the only one that could possibly have evolved, and it was rightfully there because it was simply was there. That's how simple it is. In reality, we're all in a new form of slavery, as Charles Galton Darwin said in his book, The Next Million Years, he said, on behalf of the elite, mind you, he said, there has always existed slavery in one form or another, and we are simply creating a new, more sophisticated type of slavery for the people. It's been introduced, and as you can see by the lack of feedback from the general public, as they've lost every right that ancestors and previous generations fought for, it makes you wonder, because all you have to do is spoil one generation, give them toys and lots of entertainment, bread and circuses, and they give it all up so readily, as though it had no value whatsoever. Now, as they're dumbing us down through many, many ways, inoculations is one way. They have been tampering with our genes through inoculation. Our immune systems are down, we're three-quarters shot, basically, compared to 1950s level. So the more inoculations they give us, the more shot our immune systems become. Because that was the purpose of them in the first place. It was not to make you healthier. It was because they decided a long time ago there were simply too many of us. And Thomas Malthus, who worked for the East India Company, had that big warning cry in the 1700s and published his little essay on population and the problems that he foresaw on behalf of the elite. We found the same thing being reiterated by Charles Galton Darwin, the grandson of Charles Darwin, in the 1950s with his big book, well worth reading, called The Next Million Years, where he stood up for the elite saying there's too many commoners, they're breeding out of control, they'll overwhelm us, we've got to do something about it, maybe sterilize them, maybe use the needle to do it, maybe spray it on them, maybe put in their water supply and their food supply and so on, but it has to be done. And he was given massive applause by all the leading institutions of his day for saying all of that. These are very, very, very nice psychopaths at the top. If we look at the writings of the big boys in the past when they're a bit more brazen, not that they aren't any more brazen today or less brazen, look at the ones in the past by Charles Galton Darwin, The Next Million Years, where his whole theme was, my goodness, on behalf of the aristocracy, look what's happening to the general population. They're breeding. Oh my God, they're breeding. And eventually there'll be too many of the low ones at the bottom will overpower the superior ones at the top, like himself. And that was what the whole book was really about, ways to limit the population, alter and tamper with the genetics and the hormonal levels of male and female, by the way. And we're seeing the effects of it physically today in very young children. Because these guys don't make wish lists. These guys are in positions of power who belong to big, big wealthy associations that run the world and the banking and the pharmacology and everything else. So they don't make wish lists. And Galton Darwin talked about the need to eradicate a good portion of the population, but he also talked about the way to make them better slaves. And he said in his own book, if I remember it, he says there's always been a form of slavery in one form or another, he said, all down through the ages. Now he's talking about this term called civilization, which is the elite's term, because the introduction of money in the very first place was the introduction of what they call civilization. And the commerce came with it, of course, debt, slavery, and all the rest of it. That's what he meant. And he says, we are creating a more sophisticated form of slavery. So he's talking about him and his boys and his whole clique at the top were already working on creating a more sophisticated form of slavery. And guess what? It's here. We're seeing the verges of the next part of it, which is the greening revolution. As I mentioned earlier, that sacred color of the international, the greening agenda. And I believe even Madeleine Albright's grandfather was the guy who worked in the communist system, who came up with the idea when they merged communism with the West. Capitalism and communism are two sides of the same coin because the banker owned the coin. And the pandemic, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Pandemics are beautiful. I was going to read Thomas Malthus tonight, who wrote a book in the 1700s on population control and what he called the positive factors that help with population control. And in amongst the positive factors, he had the Black Plague and putting people in swamps to live, where you build houses in areas like that, crowded conditions, big cities or towns with crowds of people put in them. They said they're all conducive to be positive factors on population reduction. So this is an old thing, and this came from a member of the British elite, Thomas Malthus. His theories are still used today by those at the top. So we shouldn't be surprised that these psychopathic types are still running the show. The Darwin family was exactly the same through Charles Galton. Darwin, who wrote his book in the 1950s, The Next Million Years, he backed up Thomas Malthus and all his theories and said why they'd have to kill off so many of the public and so many of the useless eaters, and what he called the inferior types being anyone who didn't have noble blood, basically. So that's true. It's all coming together at the same time. Very old plan, and the only problem they had was to herd us along into this big sheep pen, slowly, 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 through crisis and fear, and keep us entertained as we're doing it, too.
I just got done reading The Next Million Years by Charles Darwin.
Yep.
And I had three impressions from it. Is one, that the Earth is much older than any scientist would lead you to believe. Two, there was never a meteorite that destroyed the dinosaurs, and that. Three, that Homo sapiens sapien is not the first intelligent life form on this planet. There was other intelligent organisms before us. And why would Darwin, if that's true, lead the reader to believe that?
Why would he what?
Why would he wish to lead the reader to believe that, if I'm accurate?
Maybe it's not just for the reader. Remember, most of these books are put out, never read by the general public, and their peer group reads them. And they have archives, real archives of real histories on higher levels. I've mentioned that before, even quoting some authors and some top professors. Apparently one in about 60 or one in 80 even professors gets a chance to look inside a real archive to do with his own particular profession or his area of research. There are small elite groups at the top there who have their own special areas, and they have a different understanding of the past than the one that they give the general population. Now, initially, too, a lot of these particular groups, remember the Darwins were very inbred people, with money, all down through maybe many centuries, who knows. They only intermarried with the Wedgwood family and eventually the Galton family. But and the Huxleys too are related to them. However, you'll find that I'm sure they've been given a completely different sense of the past, what came before man, what kind of man there was, and such like. Personally, I think they all died of. I think the dinosaurs actually went under because they owed too much debt. I think the way we're going as well, because we become the dinosaur right now. But seriously, getting back to it. They do talk about different types of humans, and the Cro-Magnon especially, of having a much larger brain than modern man, for instance. But they do mention, too, that this creature would be a hard kind of creature to tame, maybe too wild, too intelligent. So who knows? Who knows what's tampered in the past? I do think, personally, something has tampered with us in the past a long time ago. I think we were much, much cleverer. At one time, I know in my own lifetime, the IQ was dropped, and that doesn't happen by itself. You're born with an IQ, basically. Something caused it to drop. So just like that can happen because of maybe injections or the alteration of hormones, which again, the next million years that particular Charles advocated, we are getting dumbed down and we are changing. And by the way, even Professor Carl Quigley, who was a historian for the Council on Foreign Relations, he refers to, in his time, back in the 60s when he was writing this book, he said a sudden thing has happened, a sudden odd change has happened. And he said women have suddenly is a key, and this can be verified with medical records too in institutions and teaching hospitals. Suddenly in the 60s, women stopped having the same hips they used to have and pelvic width they used to have prior to the 1960s. A physical change happened to the structure of women suddenly, and yet there's no big concern about it. You know, we're constantly being modified, constantly being modified.
How would they modify people like going that long ago? How would they be able to do that?
Why not? Why not, really? Because It's like Plato in the Republic, and he talks about his uncle Solon going off to Egypt and finding out that the Greeks were far, far older than he himself knew. The Egyptian priests knew it. They had the previous histories of the pre-Greek period, but the present population of Greeks didn't even know how old they were themselves. They had no idea at all, or even where they came from before that. But the Egyptians had their records. So if you want to rule a world by a specific system, especially off money, for instance, you don't want the public knowing what's happened before, especially if you've taken down empires in ancient times or even prehistoric times. Remember, historic times and prehistory is just to do with the records that are left. If there's no records, it's called prehistoric, if there's no writing. But who knows?
Agendas for a world system were born also quite a long time ago, using a slave system. It was Charles Galton Darwin, another inbred person, related to Charles, who was completely inbred for generations with only one other family, because he believed in the master race even then. And Charles Galton Darwin said in his book in the 1950s, now Charles Galton Darwin worked as a physicist on the atomic bomb project, so he wasn't just another little theorist that liked cutting up bits and bits of bodies and eyes of toads and newts and all that stuff. He was into physics, and he was the head of the British atomic energy firm at that time, and he wrote his book The Next Million Years, and he talked about the need to cull off and sterilize all the inferior types in Britain, starting with Britain and going across the world, so that the ones who should have the world in the future to themselves would certainly have it without all the useless eaters eating up all the excess grass out there in the fields. So he wanted to cull them off and have the right to do so, and he put it forth in a sort of academic style format to try and persuade you why it should be. And he got accolades from all the major media in Britain. If you have a copy of that book, try and get one in the hardcover with the original the little binder over the top of it, the slip jacket, and look at all the accolades they had from all mainstream media, saying, yeah, this guy said it like it should be said, and at last it's come out into the light and all that stuff, because they truly believed that in a post-industrial era, which they saw coming, they wouldn't need all the working classes for a start. But he also said there's always been slavery in one form or another, and whenever you're taxed on something, you're a slave. So that represents your labor. And then under the legal definitions of slavery, it's using someone's labor, generally against their will. So you call it a tax, so you take it off in a money form, and you don't think of it as being the same, but legally it is still the same. The same with property, you either own something or you don't own it. If you have to pay tribute to a government or anybody else, and they can come and lean on you and put in the heavies, that's just a mafia, it's called extortion. It's the same thing, you're still a slave.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.